Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
You're listening to Prime Time on Money FM 89.3, and now it's time for our weekly Tech Talk segment, where we get the latest coming out of the tech world. I'm Rachel Kelly, and we have with us on the line Straits Times tech contributor Wong Kai-yi. Hi, Kai-yi.
Hi, Rachel. Nice to be back on the show.
Have you been keeping safe and well?
Oh, not too bad. Not too bad. Thank you.
Great. So let's dive into the first topic that we're going to be talking about today. Like every tech company, Apple is reeling from the COVID-19 outbreak and it's keen to get back in business. It's outlined how it intends to open its famous wood and glass shops around the world once worldwide restrictions begin to lift, as well as shore up some existing product lines. Kai-yi, how will Apple stores reopen and where are the first ones opening up?
So Apple is, you know, thinking about reopening its stores, and indeed it has already thinking about opening some stores in the US. I mean, Apple has been closed since March, and it was, you know, they were supposed to open later, but then we had the circuit breaker extended. This plan gives us an insight into how Apple will open its stores around the world. So firstly, customers will be required to submit to a temperature check and wear a mask before entering the store. So these are according to the guidelines written by Apple's retail and human resources chief. So if a customer doesn't have a mask, Apple will provide them with one. So just bearing in mind these guidelines are for the US, you know, in Singapore, we obviously have to wear masks even after the circuit breaker ends and possibly much further down the line. When they enter the Apple store, customers will also be screened for other symptoms caused by COVID-19, like maybe perhaps a cough. Mm-hmm. Apple also said that occupancy will be limited in stores and employees will be focused on so-called one-to-one personalized service. So obviously they're trying to keep customers in the store, but also keep numbers low so that employees can attend to each customer, but also ensure, you know, safe distancing practices that we're all trying to do right now.
So on the flip side of that, Kai, talking about people going out to stores, but what about people staying at home? Now, Apple's also growing its Apple TV Plus service. How does it intend to do this?
I was just looking at my phone yesterday while doing this story, and I have an incredible number of video streaming services. Video streaming service apps on my phone. Like, okay, I've got Netflix, I've got Amazon Video, I've got HBO Go, and I've got Google Play Movies and TV. That sounds excessive. Yes, it is. I will admit. I'm the first one to admit. But Apple is trying to sort of get into this very crowded space, but it's also trying to differentiate itself because Netflix is, you know, the stalwarts of the industry, Netflix, HBO, that even Disney Plus, which is yet to come to Singapore, they have all been in this space for much longer than Apple has. So it has to find a way to sort of build up its library of videos so that it can more easily compete with these giants of the streaming industry.
So what
Apple
are we looking
acquiring...
at? Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Right, exactly. So Apple is acquiring older movies and TV shows for its streaming service, and it's just aiming to sort of build out that back catalog of content that can better stack up against libraries that are, like I mentioned earlier, found on Netflix or Disney Plus, which I am looking very much forward to coming to Singapore, by the way, because it's got The Mandalorian. And Apple is just trying to, it's competing with original programming, just like Netflix has, but it's also trying to round out so-called its catalog. And it's in talks with movie producers, distribution houses, and even other streaming services. Like, for example, if they want to if they're looking to offload some films from their catalog, Apple is more than happy to take them on because it's just trying to build out the number of shows that they have. And it's also actually trying to compete on price. So at $4.99 a month, that's US dollars. So in Singapore dollars, that's around maybe $6-$7 a month.
Okay.
It's half of the typical Netflix subscription, and it's also free for 1 year for people who buy Apple devices. So clearly, Apple is trying to, you know, make inroads into this space, very crowded at the moment, but trying to make inroads, trying to make progress. And you know, it's already said that video and video production is going to be one of the next pillars of revenue going forward.
Now, speaking about pillars of revenue going forward, it also seems the company might be revealing some new toys in the future, too. Are we looking at iPads?
Oh, yes, we are. We are definitely looking at iPads. And specifically, we're looking at iPad Mini as well. So So those of you who have been in the market for a small tablet, maybe an iPad, have noticed that Apple actually hasn't updated its smallest tablet in many, many years. It got, hardware that's two generations old, a small screen. But according to a new investor note from a very notable Apple analyst, the company is planning to launch a new 10.8-inch iPad and a new iPad mini with a screen that could be as large as 9 inches. That's incredible. So because 9 inches for an iPad mini is actually the same size of screen that the normal iPad has. So taking a step further, we can see how devices are just growing in size
So what's so
these
many
past
about
few
the mini
years.
then? So what's so many about the mini if it's the same size screen?
So in contrast, the old iPad mini had a 7.9-inch screen. Now we're going to compare that with a 9-inch screen for the new the so the rumored new Apple the iPad mini, and it's exactly as you said, it's not so mini anymore. So I guess it's a sign of the times when Apple starts making less sort of pocketable devices and larger screen devices. It's really showing what people are doing on their devices. They're moving away from the traditional PC and onto mobile computing. And I guess they recognize that, hey, people actually do need a larger screen to get more work done.
Yeah, now speaking about future products, and you always like to give us a glimpse of futuristic style elements, Kai, and on to the next topic, Sony and Microsoft have partnered to embed artificial intelligence capabilities into the Japanese company's largest imaging chip in a boost for the camera product that the electronics giant describes as a world first for commercial customers. So AI in an imaging chip, isn't that similar to what we're seeing in phones nowadays with Apple and Google's computational photography, or how is this different?
Exactly, you put it perfectly. It's actually what we're looking at with human-level hardware. If you use an iPhone, that face unlock feature, it projects a number of dots in your face, and then it recognizes the outlines of your face, and it unlocks your phone. And that all in itself is, powered by AI in some way or another. And it just shows that how fast and how quickly the AI can sort of trickle down into consumer devices. And Sony and Microsoft are going to take this one step further. So it's a chip that so it's going to be Sony's latest imaging chip, and it will be a big boost for the company. It will use so the big advantage is that this new chip from Sony, with Microsoft support, it has its own processor and memory built in, and it allows it to analyze video using AI tech like Microsoft Azure. So Microsoft Azure is the company's cloud computing platform, right? But this is in a self-contained system that's faster, simpler, and very much more secure to operate.
Now, Kai, I wanted to ask you, Google's been working hard to make sure misbehaving ads on its Chrome browser don't suck up battery life. What's Google's approach to axing these annoying ads, and when can users expect these new features?
You open, for example, maybe about 10 Chrome tabs, and then you look at the amount of resources they're taking up in your computer, and it's incredible, it's enormous. That's why, Chrome has got a maybe undeserved reputation as a resource hog on your computer. And thank goodness the company is trying to get over that problem, trying to work out that problem. So it will soon shut down ads that drain your device's battery life or needlessly consume bandwidth on your internet. So the product manager for Chrome said that such ads include those that, mine cryptocurrency in the background, obviously a very malicious app that they don't tell you that they're using your computer's resources to mine cryptocurrency, and it's also targeting ads that are poorly programmed or are perhaps unoptimized for network usage. And these ads can combine to drain your computer's battery life, saturate already strained networks, and also cost you money. And it's good that Google's trying to mitigate these sorts of problems. But it also is giving advertisers time to adapt to these changes. Maybe the ads aren't malicious, but the ads are probably, graphics heavy, and they do take up some resources in your computer. So it's giving ad creators and tool providers to sort of prepare and incorporate these new restrictions into their workflows, which is good. It's a more balanced approach rather than just slamming the door and saying that, hey, no, we're not going to do this anymore. We're not going to let you run ads, because Google themselves are in the business of running ads.
Now, Kai, maybe you can explain to me as well. The company has also shown off a new so-called I/O braid, a piece of string or rope that can detect human input. How does such a piece of tech work, and when can we expect it?
Oh, it's so amazing. Like, you know, when you go to tap your phone during a workout or something, you've got to turn on your screen, you've got to find that little pause button or, you know, fast forward. It's an annoyance. But Google has shown off this new touch-sensitive fabric cord, so to speak. So it lets users control electronics by either pinching, patting, squeezing, or swiping on the fabric cord itself. So think about it. You have maybe a pair of wired headphones connected to your phone, and mm-hmm. you don't even have to turn on your phone. All you do is just sort of pinch the cord or swipe it or do something, and your volume will change or your song will pause. That's incredible. It's so useful when technology just integrates itself into your life, and you don't have to work around it. It works with you.
The question isn't how long is a piece of string, it's how hard can you pinch the piece of string to get things done. Is that it?
Google obviously has to calibrate that sort of these sort of human movements. You don't have to pinch too hard. It has to feel very natural to the end user. That's what all effective technology has always done. So the braid uses what Google calls a helical sensing matrix. Incredible number of words here. Helical sensing matrix to register commands from users. And you know, within this fabric braid, so these are normal fabrics that you create a cable with, a headphone cable, for example. But it also has a series of capacitive and conductive yarns woven into the braid, and it allows the braid to identify when it's touched by someone's hand with 360 degrees of visibility. So no matter where you put your hands, it will recognize your touch. You will recognize whether you're pinching or tapping it or that sort of thing. It's very space age, and I'm just looking at, you know, a video here. Even braid changes color.
Wow.
So there are
okay.
lights. There are fiber optic lines inside the braid that provide visual feedback. So it could turn, for example, from white to green when it registers a touch. Incredible. However, unfortunately, like with all good things, it's a toss-up when we will see this. It's obviously a sort of a moonshot project for Google, something that they're working on experimentally. But we have hope, because Google has actually partnered Levi's, you know, the jeans
the
maker,
jeans
jacket maker.
Right, okay.
Exactly. So previously, they have partnered with them on a touch-sensitive jacket.
Well, interesting and fascinating facts as always, Kai. And speaking of facts, I'm sure you've got a fun tech fact for us before we leave you.
Oh, today's a real fun one. So when you leave and you know the dinner table or something, or you leave your group of friends, and then you tell them, "I'll be back in a jiffy," do you actually know that actually it is a unit of time? It is a measurable unit of time. It's not just a nebulous concept that we tell our friends, "I'll be back in a jiffy." It's actually used in several scientific spheres for measuring time. So, for example, in computer engineering, a jiffy is actually the length of one cycle of the computer's system clock. So it's roughly about 10 milliseconds. Meanwhile, in physics, a jiffy represents the amount of time it takes light to travel a distance of 1 centimeter.
Wow.
So the next time you tell your friends to be back in a jiffy, you have to be back in 10 milliseconds, actually.
I'll be moving at the speed of light next time I'm back in a jiffy.
Exactly.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Kai.
Thank you, Rachel. Love it as always.
We've been speaking to Wong Kai, tech contributor at The Straits Times.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download the SPH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.